Weekly Dose of Fat, show number 87 for Friday, January 1st, 2016.
Happy New Year!
Oh, yeah, you bastards.
Welcome to the best of the Weekly Dose.
Not this particular portion, but, you know, some other stuff that you're going to be listening to.
Hey, it features interviews that we've recorded over the last year.
I'm dying. Oh
my God. Well, this would be like the New Year's Eve and a New Year's Day
kind of. Oh, yeah. I've been up for like 36 hours.
Blathering. Hey, I saw the sunrise.
Oh my God.
Hey, Fat Bike Radio and the Weekly Dose of Fat is sponsored by Surly Bikes. Learn more at surlybikes.com.
Hey, our first encore interview comes from show number 46, and it features the Iditarod Trail Invitational winner, Mr. John Lackey.
Can you hear me?
Hey, John. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
So congratulations on the big win in the ITI 350 and setting the world record.
Thank you. It was a good one. It was a good year.
So, John.
Josh Corvus.
Our audience wants to know about your race bike, your special edition pink Corvus from Greg and the boys at Fat Bike.
Back.
Sorry. Absolutely. It's a rocket ship, man. It's an amazing bike. It's the Corvus from Fatback, and they hooked me up with the Fatback wheels and the carbon rims, and all outfitted with Revelate bags, and it's a beautiful machine, man, and it that course. It was perfect.
It sounds like you have the Beastie Boys going on in the background.
Yeah, it's a bit loud in here. There's all the racers coming in and out, and we got all sorts of stuff going on here.
Cool, man. So what kind of tires did you run?
I was running the Dillinger 5s, and that was pretty much the consensus. I think that 90% of the people in the race were running the studded Dillinger 5s. It was icy out here, really quite icy, sketchy in spots. So studs were almost mandatory.
Yeah, we were going to kind of check in with you on the lack of snow. So how did that affect the course conditions from what you might have seen in years past?
It was fast, but it was really bumpy. The rivers coming up at the start of the race here on the Yetna and the Susitna, and both of those were, it was slushy the week before, and then it froze down. So it was just rutted, kind of chunky ice. It was fast, but not super fun, just because you really had to pick your line the whole time. You had to be very attentive, just otherwise it'd kick you off the bike. And it, right at the start, Kevin Breitenbach got knocked off a bike by, he got threatened, just it bucked him and dislocated his middle finger on his left hand, and it was pointing sideways.
Oh!
He almost had to drop out of the race because of it. Yeah, it was disgusting.
Almost.
It was, it looked nasty. Almost. Yeah, he came back and got second, so he did okay. Yeah.
So what part of the race did you end up catching up with Andrew Komatyski?
So Andrew took off out of Rainy Pass Lodge and hit the pass before everybody else. He didn't take a long rest at Rainy Pass and just took off. And there was six of us all together, and we kind of sat down, and I wanted a little rest. So I laid my head down for a half hour, didn't get any sleep, but at least got to rest my legs. And then Kevin and I both took off essentially at the same time from Rainy Pass and headed up and over, and we could see Andrew we couldn't see him the way, but we were just watching his track as we were coming, and his track was looking strong. He was riding up pretty steep hills, and it was pretty impressive. We got into Roan about 35 miles past Rainy Pass Lodge, which is, you know, up and over pass down into Roan, and Andrew had stopped there for 13 minutes. He took a bratwurst on the bike and took off, is what we got. That was a report from the checkpoint. So we looked at each other, and Kevin Breitenbach and I looked at each other and said, well, crap, this guy is flying. I think he's got a plan. I think he knows what he's doing. And we were pretty scared at that point. So I said to Kevin, I'm going to ride as hard as I possibly can until I get to McGrath. And if I catch Andrew, I catch him. And if I don't, he can ride. He earned it, you know? So I took off out of Roan, and about halfway into Nikolai, so about another 60 miles down the trail, I finally caught up with him, and he was starting to waver then. And at that point, after I passed him, I made sure to pass him pretty good. He was pretty tired though, and he took a rest on the side of the trail at that point, and just recouped. And I mean, kudos to him, because I think that, I mean, he was going for quite a long way from Rainy Pass to there, and he took like 2 hours, and he finished super strong. I mean, there was just that rest, and he came back right behind Kevin right into the finish. So it was a hell of a race.
So you mentioned that Kevin had a little injury with the dislocated finger on this race. You had a herniated disc last year. How was coming back from that injury and getting back into it this year? How did that go?
It was a long process. I was planning on going to the Rovaniemi 150 race in Finland last year, and I went, but I didn't get to race. My wife raced it, and she won the women's category. And so from February last year, I was off the bike all the way through June, which is the longest time I've been off the bike for 2 decades. So then I was recovering. And it wasn't until late in the summer, this last summer, that I could actually put good long rides in, get on the bike for, you know, my long weekend 8-hour kind of rides. So it was motivating is what it was. I mean, I had a whole winter last winter where I couldn't race. I couldn't do anything. And it made me hungry for it, is what it did. And I'm happy that my back held up. My back's quite sore right now, but, you know, it made it. So that's all I can ask.
Made it in style and in world record time. Really amazing performance out there, John. We really, we're kind of speechless. I just can't believe that. That's what people are saying about the new record. 350 miles in less than 48 hours is just incredible.
It seems like that's the new norm these days. Every year something like that happens. They keep breaking them. We're going to have to break one day next year.
You know, one of these winters is going to come, and there's going to be 6 days of pushing the bike, and it's going to seem normal again. Well, we really appreciate having you on the show, John. Man, it's just an incredible honor to talk to someone so soon after they finished such an epic effort. It was like Greg wanted me to call you right away, and I was like, man, the guy's been up for 48 hours straight. I would be right for the bed. They wouldn't wake me for 3 days. But,
exactly.
But he said that after that kind of effort, he's like, he won't be able to sleep. He'll be all still running at full steam. So we really appreciate you coming on the show.
All right. Yep. Take care, guys.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Radio.
Please welcome to the radio program 2015 Fat Bike Berkey champion, Will Ross.
Welcome to the show, Will.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us in the studio, man. That's awesome.
In the studio.
All right.
Yeah. You're our first U.S. champion that has come to the studio, so you're our favorite U.S. national champion.
Right on.
So congratulations on the win last weekend at Fat Bike Berkey. So now you own maybe like the Great Lakes National Championship belt, and Ned owns the USAC belt. What do you say we settle this the old-fashioned way? Do a little best 2 out of 3 falls Indian leg wrestling.
I think I got bigger legs than Ned. I'll take him.
All right. The gauntlet good. Has been thrown down, right. Ned.
I get questions from our gerbils that listen to the show. And, you know, one of the questions that come up for a lot of the guys that are doing well in racing, and since you won, I think it's very pertinent. People want to know, what's up with your bike? How's it set up? What makes it so fast? Is it like the bike or is it the guy? You know,
my bike, it's fast. Carbon 907 whiteout, in green, of course. It's got the head rims with Dillinger 4s set up tubeless. So down to 22.5 pounds.
Nice.
SRAM XX1, Ergon grips.
So nothing somebody couldn't just buy off the showroom floor, though, basically. So really the motor is what makes it go fast.
You can totally buy it.
Looks like some Race Face Next carbon rock in there, too, right?
Yeah, lots of carbon. Lots of race face.
And it weighs
22 and a half pounds.
Yeah, yeah. So you get down in that range and they start to feel like real bikes again, don't they?
Oh, it's a rocket ship.
And it seems like Dillinger is the favorite tire of everyone in Anchorage.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, especially this year with the studability of them. Right. We haven't had any snow. So
there you go, listeners.
That'll make you faster. Buy a 907.
So what we really brought you here for is the story of the race, the tactics, and how they worked out. I don't know how much tactics went down before the turnaround, but maybe pick us up somewhere there before the turnaround and take us all the way to the finish.
So, yeah, it was a pretty fast start. It was just one big string of riders until probably, 4 miles in at the power line. And then the hills on the power line, it broke into a group of about 15. And then a couple riders dropped off between there and the turnaround. So I think at the turnaround, we were down to 10.
Did you have anybody in that pack? Was Jamie in that pack? Or
yeah, my boss and owner of 907 Cycles, Jamie, he was in the pack. Another Alaskan, John Sindel, and then Jason Lamro, also Alaskan.
So at the turnaround, Jesse Lalonde was in there, I think, still.
Yeah, Jesse Lalonde was in there. Ned was in there.
Brennan Moore.
The Lemaire rider.
Brennan Moore. Was that Jeff Hall?
Jeff Hall, yeah. He's back from kind of being half retired a little bit. Fast guy.
Yeah, he was fast. Yep, he was fast. Then a couple other guys I didn't know. One could climb super fast. He was killing us on the climbs on the way back. But yeah, after the turnaround, Ned started attacking just as he did last year. But they weren't sticking and hurting quite like they were last year. And I think we also knew we didn't want to let him get any gap like last year, because his 10 seconds last year turned into 2 minutes pretty quick.
Yeah, it sure did. And you were the one right behind him last year.
Yeah, and yeah, we both, him and I, kind of rode alone entirely the whole way back, and that's not my style. I need a draft.
So now, had you your group of Alaskan guys, had you made any kind of tactical agreement to work together to hang in there? Or I'm sure you and Jamie did, though, right?
The goal was to hang in there, and Jamie's goal was top 10, and he wasn't feeling so good that day. He wasn't feeling good before the race, but he stayed in the top 10 as long as he could. Mm-hmm. The goal was to just not hurt each other, keep us all in that front pack. And it was good. Four Alaskans made the front pack, and four Alaskans top 10.
Cool. So what finally busted it up and got you the win?
That soft snow at the 20K turnaround. So the last 10K of the race, it was really soft, lots of ruts all over the place. A lot of the 20Kers had walked up some of the steeper hills, mm-hmm. and so it was really torn up. And those play into my conditions perfectly. Yeah, the sloppier the better, and I kept it upright.
Yeah, I did hear two potential changes to next year. One is that they're going to run separate courses. So you're saying the soft stuff played into your strengths?
That definitely played to my favor, yeah, for sure.
I think the other one is they're talking about 1,000 people next year as a cap.
Woo!
It will remain the largest fat bike event in the universe.
Yeah, and they have the trail there to keep them separate and handle, I think, up to 1,000. We'll see. Depends on conditions, right? If it were just today, I mean, just 3 days after the race or 4 days after the race, it would be pretty dicey because the temperatures have been up above freezing overnight. So,
yeah, we rode on Sunday on the Sealy Trail, and it was in pretty good shape still because that night it had gotten down to like 20. So it was still, if you're riding early in the day, that's a nice thing about the way the Berkey set up, is that if you do it early in the day and it had been cold at night, it sets up pretty well still.
Oh, yeah. Thaw, refreeze, and grooming.
And packing for and stuff.
A fast course, but I like the idea that the conditions got non-groomed on this perfectly groomed course, and that led to, you know, the finish.
That led to Will
winning. Oh, it was nasty.
So Ned took a tumble. How close was he before he went off?
Him and I were together. He kind of started the surge that broke everything up when we hit the soft snow, because it was eight of us that hit the soft snow together. And Ned surged, and I was maybe 2 or 3 seconds behind him for, probably two or 3K. Mm-hmm. And then I think that was all he had. As soon as I got around, then I hadn't tried to get a gap, but it kind of happened. And then sounds like that's when he went down.
Yeah, I think it was within a mile of the finish, he said,
right,
that he had
2K or a mile. Okay. Yep. The two things that I had read.
Yeah, and then in the last 2K, the leads, okay, in Alaska we call them snow machines. I hear everywhere else they're snowmobiles. Well, the lead snow machine, he must not have been paying full attention, or I don't know what was going on, but he was slowing down and Ned was catching up. So I yelled at him to go and I caught him off guard and he just full throttled it and rooster spray up in the air. And so
he took Ned out with rooster spray.
No, I couldn't see the trail and it was going through a corner. Wow. And I ended up riding off the trail at one point and Ned caught me again. So then luckily enough, there was a steep hill right after that and sprinted up the steep hill and got my gap back.
All right. Well, that's the way she freaking goes, boys.
I know. So what else can we look forward to from you and your team in 2016? You think you'll head up this weekend to the Talkeetna Trio and go for the world championship belt?
I was thinking of doing the trio, but yeah, we'll see. Homer Epic is in a week and a half now. So
cool.
My head down to the Homer Epic. They don't have any snow. So
that's a 50-mile race?
It's a 100K, so 60-ish 100K. Miles. Right on. But yeah, they don't have any snow, so they're thinking of making it a beach race, which would be pretty fun.
Because they have tons of climbing there, I heard, on their single track trails.
It's not single track. It's like the Berkey, just mm-hmm. groomed ski trail.
Yeah.
But the hills are so steep. And yeah, you can see them from like 5 miles away and it just looks like a wall.
Cool. Well, right on. We've reached the lightning round of our carnival ride. Are you ready?
Sure.
Answer the following 5 questions in rapid succession, starting with tubes or tubeless?
Tubeless.
Salmon or halibut?
Salmon.
Flats or clipless?
Clipless.
Groomed or ungroomed?
Yes.
And your favorite mutant ninja turtle?
Michelangelo.
All right.
Right on. Muchísimas gracias for joining us on the show, Will.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Very good. Yeah, congratulations on the win, and thanks for coming into the studio. I know you just had some family business in town here.
Yeah, yeah.
Got the girlfriend's parents live in
Wauwatosa.
Wauwatosa. See, he said it correctly, too. Because, you know, we get newscasters here all the time from other areas of the country, and they try and say some of the names around here. I'm sure it's similar up in Alaska, where you've got some interesting names.
Waukesha.
Yeah, or, Waukesha. Akanamakana Kamanawak. They get that one pretty good. Yeah.
I'm dating a girl named Waukesha from Tosa.
Waukesha. So is it Susitna? Is that how you say the river?
Susitna.
Okay. It's like Susitania. Where's that river?
Andrea named our cat Susitna.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Andrea is joining us in the studio in her silent mode. Will's lady is joining us just to take a look at how it works in the big radio studio.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again, Will. Appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Good luck with the rest of your season and hope to see you next year here at the Berkey.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll be back right after this.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Radio.
This week's interview flashback is presented by the Winter Rush Fat Bike Series. Winter Rush is the home of the Michigan State Fat Bike Championships and will be your hosts of the 2017 USA Cycling Fat Bike National Championships. For more information, click on the Winter Rush banner in the show notes or visit winterrush.com.
Hey, we're back.
Next up is an interview with Mountain Bike Hall of Famer Ned Overend from show number 56.
Welcome back from the break. We have the great pleasure of having our special guest, World Champion and Mountain Bike Hall of Famer Ned Overend on the line. Welcome to the show, Ned.
Howdy, guys. How you doing?
Doing good. How's things out Colorado way?
It's nice. We've been getting some weather here lately. We've been getting some rain, snow in the mountains and rain down here, but it's good. It's all good. We need it.
That's the right attitude about weather. So, Ned, last time we saw you, we were all out at Sea Otter and Specialized had introduced their new, you're calling it Six Fatty, right?
Yep, Six Fatty is what we are calling, it's essentially the 650B Plus, or 27.5 Plus, is a lot of people are calling it.
Or but even the, 27 Plus, higher, this is a funny thing, we were going to, we got to figure out what this is going to be called.
Mid-fat, semi-fat, but Specialized is calling it Six Fatty. And you guys introduced the Fuse and Ruse hardtails at Sea Otter. But today, you guys are announcing a new Plus bike. Tell us about that.
Yep, we've just launched it. And actually, the embargo, I think it's off tomorrow, actually. But what we've done is redesigned the Stump Jumper FSR platform. So we are launching it with 650B, 6 Fatty, and 2.9. So we will have several 6 Fatty models, both carbon and aluminum, and they'll have 150mm travel on the front and 135 in the rear.
Nice. Full suspension. Yeah. Are you using basically the same frame for those three wheel sizes, or are they separate frames designed around the different wheel?
Or maybe a separate swing arm.
Width or something.
The triangles are similar, but the chain stays and seat stays are different.
Okay.
For the 6 Fatty. So and in the other two models as well.
So you're going to tailor
and the forks are different.
Okay. Very good. It's interesting to me since we, kind of started out on the fat bike thing several years ago. And then we saw 29 Plus sneak in there, but the momentum behind this 6 Fatty size really seems to be carrying a lot more steam than 29 Plus did.
And it really seems to make more sense in theory. Now, I know you did a lot of test riding on this 6 Fatty B Plus format to get the Fuse and Ruse, and I'm sure the Stumpy, to market. Tell us how you feel this tire size is an advantage for people.
Well, let me talk about how we've kind of gone towards Six Fatty.
Sure.
How it developed. It started with us making 26-inch fat bikes. Oh, well, we started probably 4 years ago, actually, with the development of it. Mm-hmm. And as we wrote those 26-inch fat bikes, obviously there's no comparison for anything like that on the snow. But in dry summer trails in a lot of conditions, we were riding those fat bikes and we realized there really is something to the tire volume thing, right? And we also started testing the Krampus. I bought a Krampus myself and got a lot of ride time on it.
Oh, cool.
And realized that, okay, that it's got good applications on summer trails. The bike was a little unwieldy because of the size of that wheel. You add a high volume tire onto a 29-inch wheel and you've got a big wheel, which really makes it tough, especially to design for smaller riders.
Right.
So, yeah, right. I agree 100%.
Raises the bottom bracket. If you're not 6'1", 29 plus is kind of tall.
Yeah. Plus, there's some real challenges in trying to get the chain stays short enough, and especially when you add full suspension.
Mm-hmm.
Then
it
everything has to grow again. So, and we really believed in the high volume tire. So we went the direction of 6 Fatty and not only launched the Fuse and the Ruse hardtails this summer, but now we've also gone to the FSR. So we're real believers in this tire size, and we think kind of the way we're describing the three different sizes is that the 6 Fatty is good for all around control. The 650B we think is the most nimble, maybe the most playful if you're going to throw the bike around. And for pure speed, 29 inch is probably the fastest, if you're racing against the clock. But I think, it's not that cut and dry. They all, kind of blur those lines a little bit in different conditions. But that's kind of how we are explaining it to the consumer.
Yeah, I can see different areas of the country where your local trails have maybe more sandy content than you might have, or they have a different, more loamy something that there's going to be a combination of tire size and, you know, tire that are just going to really love that condition. Yeah, but absolutely. It's nice to have a lot of choices. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this six fatty size, the tires that will become available. It just seems like it's happening quicker than 29 plus. And
when will the FSR Stump Jumper six fatty bike be in bike shops so people can throw their leg over one?
Like us.
Yeah, like us. I would love to ride that bike.
We should ride that bike.
I'm looking on my sheet here says it's available in late summer.
Late summer.
All right.
Well.
So this summer. So, you know, potentially a couple months.
Yeah. Well, you know, so.
To be in the stores.
Yeah.
Speaking of late summer, this is the perfect segue to your Durango Gran Fondo ride.
25th.
Which celebrates the 25th anniversary of the 1990 World Mountain Bike Championships in Durango, correct?
Yeah, we're excited about this. Todd Wells and I have decided, you know, he came to me and has been, actually for several years, he's been talking to me about wanting to do kind of a ride, a dirt classic in Durango. And, you know, we've never really wanted to take it on because we're both pretty busy, mm-hmm. you know, doing a bunch of other things. But we talked to the guys who promote the Iron Horse Bicycle Classic. And together with them, we thought this would be the perfect year to kick it off because it's also the 25th anniversary of the 1990 World Championships, which happened in Durango on that same weekend in September. This event is going to happen on September 12th.
That is awesome.
So 25th anniversary of the first UCI World. So we thought this Gran Fondo, bring some people into town, we'll celebrate that 25th anniversary and it should be a good time. We'll kind of celebrate mountain biking in Durango.
That's kind of like right on the way out to Interbike almost, isn't it?
Yeah, that surely does sound like it. So now, since it is an 25th anniversary of the World Championships in Durango, what other big names will be at that event?
Well, I'm inviting, you know, kind of all the American players who were here at the time. Plus, we're inviting some other people. You know, some of the other people like Jeremy Powers may come. Rebecca Rush, she's going to try and make it.
Sure.
Sarah Ballantyne will be coming.
Nice.
I just finished talking with John Tomac, and he's going to try and make it out here, depending on his son's motocross schedule. But obviously, right on. You know, we're fortunate. A lot of guys live close. Like Travis Brown will be there.
Excellent. How about Greg Airbold?
H-Ball.
Greg, H-B will definitely be here. he's going to have to work it because SRAM is one of our sponsors.
Killer.
They're making him work the event.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, Ned, that a lot of the people that were at that 1990 World Championship are still heavily involved in the bike industry, the least of which is the guy we're talking to right now.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, H-Ball at SRAM I'm constantly, because I've been in this for almost, that's how long I've been in the bike industry as well, 25 years, actually more like 26, but whatever. And it's just interesting to see people that had such a passion for it lasting in the industry so long, which is like, you know, sweet.
Yeah, it is too cool. So give us the date again, September.
It's September 12th.
September 12th in Durango, and we'll put a link in the show notes for people
Saturday,
that...
So.
Yeah, you've got a Facebook page or something for it yet? We'll put a link to it.
We do, and it's a Todd. Hold on, I'll.
You don't
500
have
window, 500 windows open, but it's toddandnedfondo.com.
Oh, cool. Oh,
okay. Toddandnedfondo.com.
Maybe Todd and Ned's Excellent Adventure.
Oddly enough, yeah. Open the show with that today.
That tagline in the promotion. But you're right, there are so many people that are still in the bicycle industry, it's amazing. You know, they may switch from one sponsor or a different manufacturer or be doing different things, you know, like old racers like Daryl Price, who will be here.
Oh, cool.
He's, you know, was a racer on the Stump Jumper team, and now he's a rep for Santa Cruz Bikes and Bell Giro. But most of the racers are still involved in one way or another, you know, whether coaching or still racing. Or Dave Weems is also talking about coming down, so it should be good. And we're also going to invite, you know, the mountain bike pioneers like Gary Fisher and Tom Ritchie, Charlie Kelly, Joe Brees.
Wow, that would be so,
so we're really
cool.
Trying to make it a
so if you're
festival that'll have some of the
if you're a fan history. Like we are,
yep.
You know, this is an event that you should put on your calendar and go out and share some knobby time with
knobby time. Yeah, you know, that brings cool up cats. A good point for me is what's kind of the format of the event? How are you, you know, what kind of rides should people expect? And, you know,
we have two distances. We've got a 50 miler and a 30 miler. And we're utilizing the trail systems that are all around Durango. So, you know, if you've ridden here before, we're really fortunate to have different trail systems like on the north side, south side, east and west of town. So almost like a clover leaf, and we'll go through all these different trail systems and we'll kind of come back through town, and it'll start and finish down by the river. We have a Discovery Museum
down by the river.
And a van down by the river.
We'll have a beer garden down there. So
appropriate.
So one loop is longer than the other, but there's some great single track in there. And, you know, it'll be a great place to showcase. And the final loop will be through Overrun Mountain Park, which has got a great single track, which ends up winding you right back to the start.
Is that a coincidental name, or is that actually named after you? Because that's pretty sweet.
No, it used to be the West Side Mountain Park, but it's got Ed Zink and I did a lot of work trying to get the land set aside as a recreational park.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ended up naming it after me. It wasn't my idea. It was Zink's idea.
I'm 100% behind that. That's pretty cool.
Apropos.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, very cool.
Yeah.
It's always a pleasure speaking with you and having you on the show, Ned. It's an honor. You are badass.
Yeah.
We'd bend your ear all night. We want to.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, but you guys are really kind of on the cutting edge. If you look at, you know, Fat Bike, you guys already know about it. Now the rest of the world is kind of figuring it out. And this Six Fatty is kind of a new direction. I think it's going to take off like a Fat Bike.
I agree. When we were out at Sea Otter, Gomez and I finagled a couple of fat bikes from a not-to-be-named company and took them to the beach there at Monterey and rode north on the beach, I don't know, 7 or 8 miles,
mm-hmm.
and did it probably at 5 at night, so nice sunset action, this and that. But I was amazed to see that there were absolutely no tire tracks from fat bikes on the beach there. And while we were at Sea Otter, it seemed like a lot of people got the Six Fatty concept, where they weren't quite wrapping their heads around the total fat bike thing. But man, that was a nice beach ride there.
Yeah, so there's room for it all. And Ned, we're going to be launching a new website called plusbikes.com, where we'll be covering all of this new market segment. So not only on fat bikes, because we're right on the edge of the new plus bike movement. And we really appreciate, again, that you come on and you share your insights into the testing and the riding of these brand new bikes.
Yeah, great. No, it's always always good to talk to you guys, and feel free to have me on anytime.
Hey, sure. Every week. We've got Ned over every week.
We'll spoil people.
No, thanks again, Ned. I really appreciate it. It's great having you on the show, and we'll plan towards that Gran Fondo.
Man, Gran Fondo. Maybe Alberto or Contador will be there.
All right, Ned. Thanks again.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Thanks, Ned.
Okay. See you guys. Good night.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Radio.
Man, every time I hear Ned, you know, I'm like reminded when we meet him, he's such a down-to-earth guy. He's just awesome. Ned Overham, folks.
Well, we're going to close the show with an interview with mi amigo, Tim Burnson from Team Fatback. That's from show number 49.
Please welcome the Talkeetna Trio World Champion, our friend, Mr. Tim Burnson.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, Ben Gomez.
Welcome to the show.
Well, glad to be here.
You're actually the world champion of the entire universe, if I'm reading my teleprompter correctly.
And I'm sure it's not wrong either. So, yeah, no, apparently I am the world champion of the universe. I did the Talkeetna Trio last weekend, and apparently what I win for being the world champion is a cowbell and the opportunity to work at the halfway aid station next year.
Right on.
Very good.
So, Tim, now that the snow race season is behind us, tell us how you think the season went for you and the Fatback team in 2015.
Well, I will have to say, there is still one more race left. The White Mountains up in Fairbanks.
Right. Oh, right on.
Actually, it's this Sunday. So, myself and, there's a couple of the Fatback guys I don't think are doing it this year, but there is one more race. As far as how the season went, it went pretty awesome. Jeff obviously just finished up his race to Nome. Again, an amazing time under some pretty crazy weather conditions.
Yeah.
Heather, again, set another record in the ITI and continues kind of her dominance. Kevin, second in the ITI this year and had a really strong showing down at the Arrowhead. And then obviously John setting a record in the ITI this year. Pretty amazing as well. I had a good time. I felt like I had a couple pretty good races at the Arrowhead and Sitna and Talkeetna, and then hopefully they'll have another one in the White Mountains up in Fairbanks this weekend.
Well, right on. Yeah, that White Mountains race, that I forgot about that. That you're some of your best conditions take place in March, right?
Yeah, no, it can be pretty amazing. We get some warmer temperatures, more sunlight, so you get the warmer days, and then it cools off at night and sets up the trails pretty nice.
Yeah, you finally do have some snow up that way, it looks like.
Yeah, there's nothing in Anchorage here right now, pretty much. All the winter riding is long gone, but further north, you definitely can find some in Fairbanks. Should be a lot of fun, and the trail should be great.
So, Tim, what's your favorite all-time fat bike race, and what makes that race make the top of your list?
I'd have to go with the Iditarod Trail Invitational. It's probably not everybody's fat bike type of race, just because it's so unique. And there's only so many people that are actually in it every year. But as far as terrain, you just have so many different things to train for. Weather, snow conditions, and there's more to it than, I guess, just jumping on your bike and being physically ready to do it. That being said, the White Mountains this weekend's pretty awesome, too. So,
and that one's a 100-miler, right?
The White Mountains is a 100-miler,
yeah. Yeah, okay. So prep is still important, but not the killer that some of the longer races are.
The White's, is 100 miles. It's probably close to 7,000 feet of climbing. So it's a pretty good push, but like you said, you generally tend to get a little bit better trail conditions, not all the time, and it's a beautiful spot to actually ride. Here, obviously, it's the White Mountains, so you're in the mountains a little bit, and beautiful vistas. I highly recommend it to anybody that is looking for an ultra to do sometime.
Very cool. So outside of racing, do you have any bike trips planned for this summer?
No specific plans outside of Alaska, but I hope to do some rides. If anybody's ever been up to the Denali Park, there's the park road, and early season, kind of before the tourists get here, so anytime basically before Memorial Day is a good time to go up there and actually ride that road. There's no real buses. There's a few buses on it probably the week or two before Memorial Day, but other than that, it's pretty wide open, and there's bears and moose and caribou and sheep and lynx and you name it, there's a lot of wildlife up there, and it's kind of nice to do that when there's not traffic on the road. So I'll probably do that, and then other than that, it'll be mostly riding and racing around in and around Anchorage.
Cool. Well, that bell means that we've entered the lightning round of the interview. Are you ready, Tim?
I am.
Answer the following five questions in rapid succession, starting with beard or balaclava.
Balaclava.
What's your best bike mechanic in the shop that they work out of?
I have to name three of them. Right. They don't all work there anymore. Speedway Cycles, Tim Reinbold, who used to work there, was awesome. Jason Hill, who just left probably within the last 3 weeks, was awesome. And then currently Ian Venable, who's moved up, I think it was last summer, and he's pretty awesome as well.
Right on. Favorite fat bike tire?
4-inch Dillinger.
Tubes or tubeless?
Tubeless.
And our last question of the lightning round, who wins a fight between Sam Squanch and Paul Bunyan?
I grew up in Minnesota, and definitely Paul Bunyan would kick his ass.
Well, we really appreciate you being on the show, Tim.
Yeah, thanks for being such a good guest, man.
Thanks, I appreciate it. It was good to finally get here.
Fantastic.
Don't let us hope to see you back up here next year.
Yeah, man, I think we're coming up for ITI.
Oh, are you? Cool.
Checkpoint, checkpoint, Charlie.
Are you guys, how long are you going to be up for, the week before or the week after?
Haven't made any kind of plans yet. I'm working with Kathy Merchant to volunteer at one of the checkpoints. So you might you might actually get, no, I don't. But let's talk about which one you think we should go to.
Yeah, where's the party at?
Well, any of the early ones, you're going to have everybody show up quickly. So you know, you're going to be in and out of there quick, and then you can take off if that's what you want. I would go to Squintna. Mm-hmm. I love Squintna. Actually, they got good food, and you can sit and watch TV, and it's kind of weird, but it's fun. As far as like being out there, I would probably pick like either Puntilla. It's a beautiful spot. It's right at the start of Rainy Pass. You're going to get people through there, you know, for a few days. So between runners and bikers and whatnot. And otherwise, you know, Roan would be unique. Winter Lake Lodge would be good. I probably wouldn't do Nikolai. I probably wouldn't do Yetna. But any of the other ones, I guess it depends on how much time you want to spend, and do you want to see, like, if you go to Squintna, if you want to see people come through in pretty rapid succession, then that would be the place to go. If you want to get out a little bit further off the beaten path and in maybe some prettier country, because Squintna, you're still kind of in the flatlands of the river and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But Winter Lake Lodge or Puntilla are pretty cool. And Roan, the hard part would be is actually having a place to stay, just because all there is a wall tent and there's a shelter cabin, but I know that Iditarod Sled Dog Race has kind of control of that, so whether or not we can actually use it is kind of a little bit dependent, I guess.
Well, cool. Well, we'll figure it out. And
yeah.
And we'll give you a foot rub or something when you're out there.
Super unique race. I'll be out there too next year, so my plan is to sign up here in the next couple weeks.
Very good. Thanks all again for being on the show.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We'll see ya.
Take care. All right. Bye.
That about wraps up this episode of the Best of the Weekly Dose of Fat. But first, we should tell them about the weekly contest.
Oh, yeah. The weekly contest.
Yeah, the Becker bag sewing design contest for the 40 below bag thing and the video deal. How did that work again? Because that's coming up on January 6th. You got to have that in.
Right. By noon, January 6th, you have to send an email to gomez@fat-bike.com. with Becker Bag Contest as the subject matter, and send us a hosted video, a fat bike video, and Lord Tupper will pick a winner on the show that we record on January 6th that night, and the winner gets one of these badass 40 below bags sewn by the most dangerous man in all of bag making.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Surly, for sponsoring the show.
Yeah. Check out Surly Bike Sale. And it's going on there at your bicycle retailer. If he's got anything going on upstairs, he carries Surly.
You know, even on the ice planet of Hoth.
Indeed.
Right on. Hey, next week we will be back in the studio. Probably in the state we're in right now.
State of confusion. Fun.
We'll be taking calls and ramping up the bullshizzle. So till then.
Adios, amigos.
You've been listening to Fat Bike Radio's weekly dose of fat. Find us on the web at fat-bike.com/radio. We'll see you next time.